Chapter 25. Before, and the Blunts were Americans. But so little. That was the trouble. Captain Blunt might have been a Frenchman as far as languages, tones, and manners went. But you could not have mistaken him for one. Why? You couldn't tell. It was something indefinite. It occurred to me, while I was toweling hard my hair, face, and the back of my neck, that I could not meet J.K. Blunt on equal terms in any relation of life except perhaps arms in hand, and in preference with pistols, which are less intimate, acting at a distance, but arms of some sort. For physically his life, which could be taken away from him, was exactly like mine, held on the same terms, and of the same vanishing quality. I would have smiled at my absurdity if all, even the most intimate, vestige of gaiety had not been crushed out of my heart by the intolerable weight of my love for Rita. It crushed, it overshadowed too, it was immense. If there were any smiles in the world which I didn't believe, I could not have seen them. Love for Rita. If it was love, I asked myself despairingly, while I brushed my hair before a glass. It did not seem to have any sort of beginning as far as I could remember. A thing the origin of which you cannot trace cannot be seriously considered. It is an illusion. Or perhaps mine was a physical state, some sort of disease akin to melancholia, which is a form of insanity. The only moments of relief I could remember were when she and I would start squabbling like two passionate infants in a nursery, over anything under heaven, over a phrase, a word sometimes, in the great light of the glass rotunda, disregarding the quiet entrances and exits of the ever-active rose, in great bursts of voices and peals of laughter. I felt tears come into my eyes at the memory of her laughter, the true memory of the senses almost more penetrating than the reality itself. It haunted me. All that appertained to her haunted me with the same awful intimacy, her whole form in the familiar pose, her very substance in its color and texture, her eyes, her lips, the gleam of her teeth, the tawny mist of her hair, the smoothness of her forehead, the faint scent that she used, the very shape, feel, and warmth of her high-heeled slipper that would sometimes in the heat of the discussion drop on the floor with a crash, and which I would always in the heat of the discussion pick up and toss back on the couch without ceasing to argue. And besides being haunted by what was Rita on earth, I was haunted also by her waywardness, her gentleness and her flame, by that which the high gods called Rita, when speaking of her amongst themselves. Oh, yes, certainly I was haunted by her, but so was her sister Therese, who was crazy. It proved nothing. As to her tears, since I had not caused them, they only aroused my indignation. To put her head on my shoulder, to weep these strange tears, was nothing short of an outrageous liberty. It was a mere emotional trick. She would have just as soon leaned her head against the overmantel of one of those tall, red granite chimney pieces in order to weep comfortably. And then when she had no longer any need of support, she dispensed with it by simply telling me to go away. How convenient! The request had sounded pathetic, almost sacredly so, but then it might have been the exhibition of the coolest possible impudence. With her one could not tell. Sorrow, indifference, tears, smiles, all with her seemed to have a hidden meaning. Nothing could be trusted. Heavens! Am I as crazy as Therese? I asked myself with a passing chill of fear, while occupied in equalizing the ends of my necktie. I felt suddenly that this sort of thing would kill me. The definition of the cause was vague, but the thought itself was no mere morbid artificiality of sentiment, but a genuine conviction. That sort of thing was what I would have to die from. It wouldn't be from the innumerable doubts. Any sort of certitude would be also deadly. It wouldn't be from a stab, a kiss would kill me as surely. It would not be from a frown, or from any particular word or any particular act, but from having to dash bear them all, together and in succession, from having to live with that sort of thing. About the time I finished with my necktie, I had done with life too. I absolutely did not care, because I couldn't tell whether, mentally and physically, from the roots of my hair to the soles of my feet, whether I was more weary or unhappy. And now my toilet was finished, my occupation was gone. An immense distress descended upon me. It has been observed that the routine of daily life, that arbitrary system of trifles, is a great moral support. But my toilet was finished, I had nothing more to do of those things consecrated by usage, and which leave you no option. The exercise of any kind of volition by a man whose consciousness is reduced to the sensation that he is being killed by that sort of thing cannot be anything but mere trifling with death, an insincere pose before himself. I wasn't capable of it. It was then that I discovered that being killed by that sort of thing, I mean the absolute conviction of it, was, so to speak, nothing in itself. The horrible part was the waiting. That was the cruelty, the tragedy, the bitterness of it. Why the devil don't I drop dead now? I asked myself peevishly, taking a clean handkerchief out of the drawer and stuffing it in my pocket. This was absolutely the last thing, the last ceremony of an imperative rite. I was abandoned to myself now, and it was terrible. Generally I used to go out, walk down to the port, take a look at the craft I loved with a sentiment that was extremely complex, being mixed up with the image of a woman, perhaps go on board, not because there was anything for me to do there, but just for nothing, for happiness, simply as a man will sit contented in the companionship of the beloved object. For lunch I had the choice of two places, one bohemian, the other select, even aristocratic, where I had still my reserved table in the petit salon, up the white staircase. In both places I had friends who treated my erratic appearances with discretion, in one case tinged with respect, in the other with a certain amused tolerance. I owed this tolerance to the most careless, the most confirmed of those bohemians, his beard had streaks of gray amongst its many other tints, who, once bringing his heavy hand down on my shoulder, took my defense against the charge of being disloyal, and even foreign to that milieu of earnest visions taking beautiful and revolutionary shapes in the smoke of pipes, in the jingle of glasses. That fellow, C. Garkin, is a primitive nature, but he may be an artist in a sense. He has broken away from his conventions. He is trying to put a special vibration and his own notion of color into his life, and perhaps even to give it a modeling according to his own ideas. And for all you know, he may be on the track of a masterpiece. But observe, if it happens to be one, nobody will see it. It can be only for himself. And even he won't be able to see it in its completeness except on his deathbed. There is something fine in that. I had blushed with pleasure. Such fine ideas had never entered my head. But there was something fine. How far all this seemed. How mute and how still. What a phantom he was, that man with a beard of at least 7 tones of brown. And those shades of the other kind, such as Baptist with the shaven diplomatic face, the Mater Dottel in charge of the petit salon, taking my hat and stick from me with a deferential remark. Monsieur is not very often seen nowadays. And those other well-groomed heads raised, and nodding at my passage, Anger. Anger following me with interested eyes. These young XSS and ZS, low-toned, markedly discreet, lounging up to my table on their way out with murmurs. Are you well? Ill one see you anywhere this evening? Not from curiosity, God forbid, but just from friendliness, and passing on almost without waiting for an answer. What had I to do with them, this elegant dust, these molds of provincial fashion? I also often lunched with Dona Rita without invitation. But that was now unthinkable. What had I to do with a woman who allowed somebody else to make her cry, and then with an amazing lack of good feeling did her offensive weeping on my shoulder? Obviously I could have nothing to do with her. My 5 minutes' meditation in the middle of the bedroom came to an end without even a sigh. The dead don't sigh, and for all practical purposes I was that, except for the final consummation, the growing cold, the rigor mortis that blessed state. With measured steps I crossed the landing to my sitting room. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.